This is Illinois Edition on NPR Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey. The criminal justice system has become increasingly reliant on fees. People convicted of crimes have become moneymakers for state and local government, paying for everything from prosecutors' offices to new police cars. This spring, the Illinois General Assembly is considering big changes to that system. Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook is among the co-sponsors of a bipartisan effort. She recently visited our State House Bureau to speak with me about the legislation. State Representative Elaine Nekritz, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here.
Court fees in Illinois. This has been an issue going back decades. Reporting on this a few years ago, I found the Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court complaining about the fee burden in, I think, the early 90s in one of the annual reports from the Illinois courts. What is the overarching goal of this legislative push to change the way Illinois handles fees in courts?
You're right about the courts complaining bitterly about the burden of fees for criminal defendants and civil litigants. So about two years ago now, the court asked the legislature to form a task force to look into this issue. There was a task force that did that, issued a report, as you know, last summer, and now we're implementing it through legislation. There's really three goals of the legislation. One is to take the patchwork of fees that we have in over a dozen places in statute and put them into one place so that they're simple to understand, transparent, and easy to figure out. The second goal is to lower the overall burden of the fees. And the third goal is to provide a waiver for those that actually can't afford them, no matter what level of fees they're at.
And this is because if you break down somebody, let's say, gets convicted of marijuana possession or something like that, there may be a base fine of $500, an additional fine for the street value of the drugs, but then we're looking at there's a traffic and criminal conviction surcharge, DNA analysis, perhaps, crime victim assistance fund, spinal cord trauma fund,
et cetera.
And it goes on and on. And by the time the defendant is done, that $500 fine could be thousands and thousands of dollars that they owe.
And it's worse, the place where it's the worst and frankly, the most disparate impact is on DUIs. You might have a county in Moultrie County that charges $1,000 of fees on a DUI, and the county right next door is charging $2,000 on DUIs. And so that seemed really unfair to the citizens of Illinois.
So what on the criminal side, what sort of things are you and you're co-sponsored with Representative Steve Anderson, a Republican? This is a bipartisan effort to push this change through. What sort of things are you trying to change? Are there specific fees that are being eliminated?
There are specific fees that are being eliminated, and some of those, one of the goals of the task force was to look at whether the fees had any relationship at all to the crime that they were being imposed on, and we found that many of them did not. And I understand why the legislature has done that over the years. Is, you know, we're obviously in a very difficult fiscal bind, and so we looked anywhere we can to find revenue. And one of the easiest places to do that is on criminal defendants who don't have a voice here in Springfield and don't have a lobby. So we could tack on $5 to a DUI or a retail theft or something like that to fund state police cars or to fund a fire truck loan program for municipalities. So we've done a lot of that. The task force said, can we make sure that there's a straight line, connect the dots between the nature of the crime and the nature of the fee?
Will this control in the future too? Could future General Assemblies come back and start creeping on these additional fines again, or are you trying to enact a sort of change in philosophy of how this is done? Because I don't think the budget situation being what it is, the state's not going, still going to be looking for money in a lot of different places.
So Representative Anderson and I do have the goal of trying to sort of change the culture around these fees. I don't pretend to think we can't bind the hands of future General Assemblies, but what we can do and what we have done is to put a total dollar amount in the legislation so that if you are convicted of, of burglary, you'll know exactly what the fees are that are going to be tacked on. And if a legislator wants to come in and change that, they're going to have to actually add to that number. And it's going to be very transparent that you're adding on a fee, and if you don't want to add on to that fee, if you want to take away dollars from some of the other places where those fees are currently going, you know, those impacts are going to be very obvious as well. So the way that the legislation is and the statutes will be structured will make it easier to make the argument that what you're doing is violating the spirit of the law.
What sort of reception have you gotten for this among your colleagues?
I don't feel that there's been any push on the philosophy behind the legislation of making these laws more clear and trying to control the cost of the fees. Where we have gotten pushback, and this is just because of the complexity of it all, is that when we ended some of the fees, of course, the folks that were receiving those fees are providing a lot of pushback. And one of the places that happened was, frankly, for police and fire service. It's not our intention to end those services that are being funded by those fees. So we're working very closely with law enforcement and with the fire service to make those corrections so that the dollars continue to flow.
Of course, every piece of legislation has to get through not only House Committee, which this bill has done, but also the full House, and then Senate Committee, the Senate, and be signed into law by the governor. Have you been working with senators and anyone from the Rauner administration about passing this into law?
There were senators that were part of the task force that formed the basis for this legislation, and the governor had an appointee on that as well. So none of this will be a surprise to either the Senate or the governor's office. Most of the activity right now is occurring in the House, but we're hopeful that we can work through the opposition that's out there, and once we hand it off, it should be fairly smooth sailing.
You do expect to have some more changes based on just some of the
groups
that are being affected.
We do, yeah. And again, you know, I can't end the funding for training for local police officers, and I recognize, you know, both Representative Anderson and I recognize that that's just not a tenable outcome. So we're working on through those issues.
Can you put this in the context of the broader change in Illinois government over the past 20 years towards more fees? I mean, personally, I would trace this back. I mean, we've had Governor Blagojevich in the early 2000s did not want to raise the income tax at all. There was a big push to change what people call the revenue structure of the state. So we saw a lot of fee increases, not necessarily on criminal justice, but overall in state government. Can you put this, you know, the specific idea of court fees in the more general picture of a government that's funded by fees? Is that a good idea?
Yeah. Let me speak to that more in terms of the funding of the court system, because, you know, most people don't find themselves a participant in the court system. And so I think you could say, well, it should be a user pays system. But it is, I think, a fundamental part of our democracy and the way our government is structured. And access to the courts and free, or not free, but fair access to the courts should be a fundamental function of government. And so as it's been easier to tack on fees to fund the court system rather than face the difficult issue of how do I raise more general taxes in order to fund that court system, the legislature and I think local governments as well have defaulted towards the easier path, the fee path. This legislation, I think, is going to force us to look a little bit more closely at what is our public policy relating to funding courts and how can we make that happen in a more general way.
You also are working on a piece of legislation this spring looking at people who've been in the Department of Corrections for a very long time. I get emails from criminal justice reform advocates who have been excited about this legislation. Can you talk a little bit about how you're trying to deal with what you're calling elderly prison inmates?
I call it the elderly prisoner bill. What the legislation does is for folks that have served at least 20 years in the Department of Corrections and are over the age of 55, it would provide a two-step process for them to appeal to be let out of prison but still serve on a mandatory supervised release program for the balance of their term. Anyone that's convicted for 20 years to prison probably committed a very serious crime. So I don't take this lightly, but I do think that there are individuals in the prison system who have rehabilitated, have used their time in prison to get an education, to learn a skill, and actually have turned their lives around. And the goal of prison should not simply be retribution. It should be rehabilitation. And if someone has rehabilitated themselves, can prove it to not only the Department of Corrections, but also our Prisoner Review Board, I think we ought to give them an opportunity to live out their life in a regular, with society.
Was it a mistake for Illinois to go away from indeterminate sentencing, which, if people are not familiar, that's where it used to be in Illinois for a time in the 70s, at least, where you would be sentenced to 25 to life or something, and then the Prisoner Review Board gets to decide whether you're released. We went to a determinate sentencing where now it's a specific number of years, and with further so-called enhancements like truth in sentencing, now if you're sentenced to 30 years for murder, at least, you're going to serve 30 years. For other violent crimes, you might have to serve 85% of that.
I don't know that I would say it was a mistake. There, you know, we certainly weren't alone in the country in doing that. And there are, I think, positives and negatives to each one of those systems, whether it be indeterminate sentencing or, the determinate. But I do think that we need to recognize the weaknesses in the current system and develop policies that try to address those weaknesses. And so things like, I do think that was a mistake. And the research and the data would all show that things like truth in sentencing and mandatory minimums do nothing to enhance public safety. All they do is throw people in jail longer and don't provide any rehabilitation or the kind of things that we would want to see happen for our prisoners.
Within the last few months, we had a poll of crime victims that was published here in Illinois that says a lot of them favor a more smart on crime approach, if you will, to borrow a term from a group that's pushing these policies elsewhere in the country right now. On the other hand, you can also find victims who will be disturbed by this idea that somebody would be released. At a committee hearing this spring, there was a state representative who identified himself as a former prosecutor and said, we need to stand up for victims. How do you navigate that when you're trying to do this sort of thing?
Certainly, we want to be sensitive to victims. I can't imagine anything more horrific than losing a loved one to a violent crime. That being said, the criminal justice system has more than one goal, and the Illinois Constitution specifically sets forward the rehabilitation of prisoners as one of our goals of the criminal justice system. So, as with most things, it's trying to find a balance between those competing interests. If that might even be a stretch to call them competing interests, but I'll use that term anyway. And that's the difficult job of legislating and making public policy.
I feel like I would be remiss if I did not ask you, will we have a budget and will it be before January 2019?
I ask myself this question every day about whether we will have a budget and when will we have one. It doesn't feel like we will have one in the foreseeable future, but on the other hand, I can't imagine waiting until January of 2019 to resolve this with the already deep hole and the almost impossible hole we would be in by then. So I remain hopeful, if not optimistic.
Yeah, and frankly, I wonder what happens in January 2019. If Governor Rauner's reelected and we still have Democratic majorities in the legislature, nothing's changed then. I mean, perhaps we would go another who knows how long.
I can't wrap my head around that outcome, so I try not to think about it.
All right. Well, Representative Nekritz, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.
State Representative Elaine Nekritz is a Democrat from Northbrook. She's also an assistant majority leader in the Illinois House. I'm Brian Mackey.